Hey, everybody. Welcome to the Tech Connect Podcast. I'm John Martin.
And I'm Dean Reverman.
Today, we're going to be talking about management styles and strategies. It's a Dean and John special. What makes a good manager? What makes a bad manager? Mm-hmm. We're going to talk about some of the popular styles, strategies, books, concepts in management. And then we're also going to talk a little bit about management in the time of COVID. So
we're going to get
an interesting conversation.
Squared away on management, right?
That's right.
There you go.
As always, by the time we're done, you're going to know everything you need to know and be the perfect manager.
There you go.
Time for us to plug in and get connected.
Welcome to the Tech Connect Podcast. It's time to get connected.
All right. As I said, our topic today is management.
Yep.
Dean and I both have some experience here. Dean, I'll let you start. Tell us a little bit about your manager. Obviously, right now, your manager, you're technically my manager,
I guess, right?
Yeah.
In some bizarre world, yes.
Exactly.
Right? Yeah. Management experience. Yep. Goes back. So even back in my restaurant days, I guess, I was a manager at the ripe young age of 18, working at a local pizzeria. Nice. I managed line, you know, so right. And managed, I guess, some people, you know, underneath me and all that kind of good stuff. But, you know, after that, and as we talked about in previous podcasts, got into sales, then got into sales management. So I've been managing, I guess, for the last pretty close to 20 years, I guess, John. And so I've been managing sales folks. Mm-hmm. I've been managing folks in marketing as well, outside business development. So that's kind of my purview, if you will, on the management side. How about you?
I've always had this habit of falling into management.
Yeah.
It's not something I ever necessarily strove for, but I feel like I kind of still end up there at the end of the day.
Yep.
When I was in retail a long time ago, I kind of ended up in management. I started off as like a store key holder or whatever, and eventually
the assistant key holder.
Yep. Eventually the assistant manager left, so they bumped me up to that. And I was like, okay, it's one of those things where just like, you're the assistant manager now. Like, okay, sure. Then after that, in my first office job for a publisher, I was in sales for a while, immediately got promoted to a team lead, and then eventually a district manager there as well. And it's always one of those things where I just felt like I just found myself doing the job anyway. So they just made it official and, gave me the title and the pay raise.
Yep.
But, you know, I've always liked being in management to some extent. Like, just because I like helping people. I like helping them get to where they need to be, helping them get better at what they're doing. And if I can lend some expertise and assistance with that, I'm happy to do so.
Mm-hmm.
So that's been my experience. I haven't been a manager for maybe about 5-6 years now. I'm kind of okay with that. It's kind of nice to be on your own and not have to be responsible for a bunch of other people.
Don't have the responsibility. You don't have to sit around and think and hand-wring all the time about, the employees that are under you, or is the strategy right, or am I executing correctly?
Exactly. Right? Or, and we'll talk a little bit about this at some point, being that middleman, where if you're in some sort of middle management position, not necessarily at the top and not at the bottom, you kind of get into that place where everything rolls downhill to you and you've got to roll it downhill to some other people, and that can be a little difficult to navigate sometimes.
I'm going
to
argue that you're not in the right scenario. If you're feeling that you're in kind of a scenario, you're probably not in the best work environment at the end of the road. But, hey.
Quite true.
Yeah, we've all kind of lived that life, I think.
Oh, yeah.
You know?
Yeah.
And especially I think that, certain industries, and maybe we'll get into that, certain industries and certain profiles of jobs require, and I'm using air quotes here, require that kind of management style where it's kind of that, top-down, structured type of thing. I don't know. I've never really gotten into that type of a structure, but I've been involved in them, and I understand them, and I understand their place, I guess, to a certain degree. But anyway.
Exactly.
I digress.
No, that's fine. So the quote that came to my mind, because let's be honest, you go on LinkedIn, it's always filled with like all these quotes about, business and management and what does and doesn't make a good leader.
Right.
And they're always very contradictory too. You can find a quote to meet any situation you want
you can.
Someone somewhere posts on LinkedIn.
No, wait a minute. I can find on the internet anything to back my opinion.
Exactly.
No.
Shocking. Yeah.
What?
And LinkedIn's just a microcosm of that.
Right.
Stunning. Yeah. So, but what I always come across a lot when it talks about, employee retention and management is people don't leave companies, they leave managers. Mm. And that's one of the ones where I look at and go, you know, you're kind of right about that. Mm-hmm. I mean, I'm not going to say people don't leave companies because you mm-hmm. might have a good reason to leave a company mm-hmm. and maybe still love your manager. Mm-hmm. But I do agree that sometimes people do tend to leave managers. And mm-hmm. managers can have a lot of influence on whether you actually do enjoy your job or not. Mm-hmm. If you have a bad manager, I would think that probably leaves you with a bad impression of that job. Even if the job overall was good or the company mm-hmm. was good, if you can't work with your manager, you're struggling in that management environment, then mm-hmm. you know you might end up leaving because of that. So,
well, and I think there's a lot of truth to that because when you think about it, you know, how there's really very few people that actually do what they were born to do, or yep. it's often talked about love to do. So right. that means the vast majority of us are doing things that maybe it's not our calling, if you will, but we're paying the bills, we're getting stuff done. So when you're in that kind of an environment, yeah, I can see totally that, you know, people don't leave companies. They're leaving the people that are managing, and I'm going to start using this word too, interspersed leading them, because, right. and I know that that's a blurry line, and sometimes I get challenged myself between the difference between management and leadership, but anyway, well, we'll get into that. But yeah, I mean, I think for good cause, the phrase holds value.
Yeah.
They leave their managers.
Yeah, I could go off on an entire rant about the whole concept of like, you got to find what you love to do.
Right.
That's another one of those LinkedIn tropes that I get so edgy. I literally wrote an entire piece that I was going to post on LinkedIn about this once and kind of like held back because I was like, this is getting a little too caustic for its own good and maybe I want to clean this up. I might still do it at some point because I get so frustrated when I see that. This idea that like, yeah, we're all supposed to find
like
the
some
perfect job.
Out there.
Right. Like, oh, and follow it. And like, well, right. guess what? If we all did that, there'd be a lot of jobs that no one ever did.
No doubt.
And, you know, and the other part of that to me is like the idea that like your job doesn't have to define your entire existence mm-hmm, either. Mm-hmm. But to tie it back to management, that sometimes you can be in those roles that maybe aren't your dream job, mm-hmm. but a great management, you know, great management, a great manager, and a great team around you can make that a job that you end up loving and mm-hmm. you know, and have a lot of love for because
yep.
of that.
Agreed.
So let's kind of talk about good versus bad management.
Yep.
And, you know, feel free to use some examples, you know, maybe mm-hmm. without naming names, you know, we don't want to get anybody in trouble here or get you mm-hmm. in trouble. Mm-hmm. But, you know, what do you think makes a good manager? What do you think makes a bad manager? And what kind of experiences around that have you had?
I'm going to start with a bad manager just because that's the shortest putt for me.
Right.
And the easiest one coming out of the gate there are managers who are out for themselves. Mm-hmm. And you can see them coming a mile away mm-hmm. that really what is going on is nothing but a benefit to that person. And they direct all the activities, all the communication, everything that's done is for the betterment of that manager, whether yep. that manager is trying to make themselves look better in the eyes of the executives above them,
right?
Or whether it's that manager trying to increase their wallet by executing something that's going to get them paid. And it's very obvious that the reason why they're doing whatever action it mm-hmm. is, whether it is, you know, berating people or setting quotas or whatever it may be, you know, in the sales world or, you know, in other fashions, it's just they're being very dictatorial about what they're trying to get done only because it benefits them.
Right.
And those types of managers are terrible, right? Those are the ones that people are underneath them and everybody understands that they really feel like they are in this trough, this trench, if you will, of, oh, yeah, I got to do this. But the only reason I'm really doing this is because it's benefiting the guy above me or
right.
the girl above me who is of that mindset,
right.
who is just locked into, hey, it's all about me.
What have you done for me lately?
What have you done for me? You know, and they'll justify it. They'll justify right. it to the nth degree. Oh, well, you know, we were given a directive. We have to hit this goal. And so I'm going to do whatever it takes to hit that goal or whatever. But they're just really bad managers, really bad leaders, I guess, would be one of those. Now, in my own experience, heck yeah, I've come across people like that. When you're in sales, for some reason, it feels like there's a lot of managers out there that are of that mentality
right.
because sales is so money driven, right?
Mm-hmm.
Money driven, not just the revenue of the company, but money driven for the individual. So a lot of individuals put on these blinders, managers, and all they can see is, you know, my bonus at the end of the road. And so I'm going to manage to a style that gets me my compensation.
Right.
Right. And it's very myopic in what they're doing. So I had a manager once with just classic that individual that it really didn't matter. you know, I was hitting as an individual rep, I was hitting the president's club, you know, I was making my number, that kind of stuff. But I came, one thing I came across a customer that I would call my cash cow for a little bit. It was this customer that I found that was going to be buying recurringly from me. And so it was awesome. It was one of those things. It made me go to the president's club every year. I was like, yeah, this is awesome. But my manager at the time was like, you know, okay, yeah, you're helping me hit my number, but you know, that's about it. You know, you shouldn't be getting any recognition, you know, whatever. Even made it look like he was the one that came to the table with the account, right?
Right.
Bad managers are the ones that are out for themselves. To me, that's the one that's at the top of the list.
I have to almost completely agree with that. When I was thinking myself, like, what makes a good and bad management, that is something that clearly came to my head, is the person who's in it for themselves, who doesn't understand what a team is, and also doesn't get the fact that, typically speaking, the manager's not the one who's getting it done. Like, they're not the one who's executing.
Yep.
Like, your job is to help navigate and direct and, you know, corral together the right group of people and give them the right, you know, the right tasks, the right tools, the right, you know, teaching, you know, to get them where they need to be to do the right job. And if you're thinking about how does this affect me, you're not getting the fact that, like, they're the ones that are doing the work to get you there. And that was, like, I remember that myself when I was in sales. I was kind of the same way, where, like, as my own individual sales, like, I felt responsible for my position, for my role, for what I needed to do. And, you know, if I made it or didn't make it, that was solely on me. But then when I became a manager, I realized, like, all right, and at different times I had anywhere from 9 to 13 people, I think, on my team, like, you know, every one of these people, what they do is going to reflect on me and is going to impact whether I make my goals or not. And that can be very difficult, you know, and I think even for the best managers, and, you know, you can ask a lot of the people that I manage, you know, some of them may have differing opinions of me, you know, and some of them may have thought I was great. Some of them may have thought I was terrible. But overall, I tried to be that kind of manager where I thought, hey, you're the guys that are getting it done. I'm just here to help you get there and facilitate you. That was always kind of my particular style. We'll get more into styles in a moment too. But, you know, I had to always think to myself at the end of the day, like, these people are responsible for my success. I'm responsible for their success. But in the end, they're the ones that are out there every day doing it. They're the ones that are making the phone calls. They're the ones that are getting the deals. Every now and then, sure, I would help out or participate, but you got to rely on them. And if you're solely thinking about, like, how are you going to get me to where I need to go, then you're missing the whole point of being in management, as far as I'm concerned.
Yeah, I would agree. And maybe that connects the dots to what a good manager is. And and I know that that's, to me, that's really, in some ways, very difficult to define what a good manager is. But the one word that I did land on, and my optics here are a manager who is managing a group of people that have a variety of skill sets and a variety of ages, so those are my optics. And if that is your purview, I think the word that comes to my mind would be adaptability. You have to be able to adopt your management style relative to the people that are on your team. You may have some young people that are on your team that need a little bit more guidance, maybe even a little bit more of that top down that we were just talking about, where, yes, but let's do it this way, kind of a thing, and opening the eyes to a younger employee. Oh, you know what? This does work, as opposed to maybe somebody who's been around for a little while, and you don't need to micromanage. You are exactly where you were at. Just guide and lead, and here's the vision, and here's what we're trying to do. Go get it done, type of a thing. So adaptability, I think, is what it makes a good manager good. You know, somebody who can take the time and navigate some of the nuance that's on the team that's below them, because I think that's necessary.
Yeah, I agree. And to add on that, I think also, when I think of what makes a good manager, it's someone who is to some extent empathic and also willing to show their people, like, I'm in this with you. Because I know, obviously, when you get to management, you know, your particular day-to-day work, what you're responsible for, what's expected out of you, usually completely changes. You know, it's not a, like, yes, maybe I have, like, you know, X amount of people underneath me, that their collective territories and accounts or whatever all wrap up to me. And that's all part of what makes me successful or not. But that's probably not what you're doing day to day. You're not doing the same kind of day to day work they are.
Right.
But hopefully you understand that day to day work they're coming from. And it's one of those things where I'm always conflicted about, is it better to be a manager who came in from the outside or from within? Because I think there's good and bad to both of them. That's something else we can kind of dig into a little bit more as well. But you know, if you're someone who came in from the outside, then you have to learn that empathy and understand, like, what are they dealing with? How are they, you know, how is their business structured? What is their day-to-day life like compared to mine? And how can I facilitate that in order to achieve my goals as well? Mm-hmm. Versus, I think if you're someone that came from the inside and maybe you did that job previously, you have a better understanding about that. But at the same time, you could also potentially have a harder time getting away from that and into the management role instead. So, but for me, a good manager, I think, is someone who does have some of that empathy, that understands, like, look, I get what you're going through. Mm-hmm. And maybe every now and then they step down a little bit and get mm-hmm. into it themselves, mm-hmm. you know, like, mm-hmm. like maybe, hey, I join you on a sales call, or yep. I join you on a presentation or yep. something, you know. You know, we had our podcast a couple weeks back about presentations. Mm-hmm. You know, go back and mm-hmm. listen to that one if you want an effective way to, mm-hmm. to present and to teach, you know, your people how to present. Mm-hmm. But, you know, I think it's very important for a manager to be seen as someone that, like, hey, if I need that person, they can jump in and assist me with this in a mm-hmm. pinch. Or, more importantly, I see them working just as hard as I am. It's not that person sitting in their office watching all of us and waiting for us to make them money, but someone who's working just as hard as we are.
Oh man, right there, you dove into a couple things and I'm like, oh man, there's some good nuggets there. You know, going back to the whole, should a manager be brought in or should they be, hired up? I think, to me, they're equidistant, and that's not the right word, but they're equal in the sense that it's really the optics of the person who's going into that role.
Right.
I have come from the outside into a role. And I think that there you have to be cognizant of the fact, let me make this statement first, completely agree with everything that you just said, that you should understand what's going on as a manager, you know, that you're asking people to do. What is it that you're asking people to do? You should understand exactly what you're trying to get them to do, or at least really, really well.
Right.
Now, you may not have the experience, but you should understand it. So, you know, I've come into roles where I didn't understand at all. You know, on day one, I didn't understand what mm-hmm. was going on. So that was my goal initially, was, okay, what's going on here? I have to understand the lives of the people that I'm managing now. What are they doing from a day-to-day perspective? As opposed to maybe somebody who's brought up through the ranks, and you hit the nail on the head. Oh, well, they understand everything, but now the management struggle is, I know how to do everything. The underling's some guy, well, he can get it done. You know, I'm just going to sit back here and not do it. And then the manager's like, you know, probably put into that position because they're really good at executing, getting stuff done. They understand everything that's going on. And so now you've got this dichotomy that is, you know, really hard to get out of. Yeah. But I do like where you're going with a good manager needs to understand the roles that they're managing. And for a couple reasons, some of them are you have to know what people. So if you're managing accountants, you need to run the reports that they're running. Right. You know, what is it that they're running? What tools are they doing? You need to understand how much is it going to take an average person to do this? Mm-hmm. Because from a management perspective, you kind of got to need to know those mm-hmm. things, right? You got to know if somebody's trying to pull the wool over your eyes. Well, I tried to run that report, but it took me, 2 hours. That report doesn't take too long.
Right.
I'm sorry. Something's wrong here, right? It shouldn't have taken you that long.
Calling your bluff. Yeah.
I'm calling your bluff. So, but you wouldn't know that if you're not in the trenches understanding what's going on. So I love the fact that you brought that up. A full-throated endorsement of, you got to know what people are, you know, that you're managing, what they're going through and what they're doing.
Yeah, exactly. So let's talk about some managerial styles.
All right,
I came across an article on workzone.com. It's a little blog they had about management styles. And I think it was the 7 different styles is what they came up with. And we don't have to run through what all of those necessarily were. A couple ones that jumped out, like, you know, the authoritarian styles, visionary, transactional, servant mm-hmm. leadership, et cetera.
Who knew there were so many different styles?
And the funny thing is,
I'm like,
when I researched this, you could find any number of sites that had anywhere from 7 to 12 different styles. There's plenty of different types out there.
Yeah, wow.
But a lot of them still kind of came together into the same ideas. And these mm-hmm. 7 to me, like, kind of encapsulated most of the ideas.
All right.
So I'm curious from you, like, which of these stood out to you as ones that you wanted to talk a little bit about, maybe ones that resonate with you, or ones that you're like, man, that is not me, or not what I get into at all.
I don't know. I mean, I kind of, as I was reading some of them, I'm like, this is not real. This is not, nobody does this type of stuff. But I guess, what the one takeaway I did have from this is that, to a certain degree, different environments require different management.
Yeah. And they do kind of note that in that article.
They do
too.
Note that. And that's the only thing that I kept going back to in my mind and saying, okay, maybe they are right here. Because, you know, again, at first I was like, what is going on here? You know, they're describing some management styles that are like, but, you know, when you think about it, I mean, a manufacturing floor, when you have people, you know, doing a certain task the same way every day, that's a different management style than somebody who's in the front office in sales, you know, and trying to motivate that person. Totally different than somebody who's, you know, maybe on the accountant side, more introverted. So different management styles. I get it. You know, I'm not classically trained on what the other management styles are out there. I guess the servant leadership management style is one that you know, kind of, I do feel it kind of goes right back to where we were. You got to kind of know what people that you're managing are doing. Right. And when you do that, you know, one of the ways to do that would be you got to get in the trenches too. So it's that kind of that servant leadership, you know, teaching people, showing them, yes, I know, I know what you're going through. I've been there. I've done that. I'm doing it with you right now, right, type of a thing. I think that there's a lot of value behind that type of a management style.
Yeah.
What one stuck out to you as being
the servant leadership definitely is one that like resonated with me as a, you know, it's basically been what we've talked about, the kind of like, hey, I'm here, I'm your manager, but in a sense, I also work for you.
Yep.
Because, you know, your success is my success.
Yep.
So I need to help you get where you need to be. So if that means I help facilitate that in some way and I can help you and work for you in some way to do that, then I want to be that person that does that. And again, like you mentioned, doesn't always work. That manufacturing floor in particular you mentioned, like it's not going to really work if you go to your people and say, hey, you know, what can I do for you today? And I'd be like, well, you can step in and start working on these parts for me, you know, or, you know, package these goods. That'll work out for you.
That'll really help me out.
No, that's not what I meant, you know, but you know, so that might be a little bit more of a driven style where you're like, hey, you know,
that might need to be a little bit more authoritarian, right?
Exactly.
Right?
Yeah, and that was the one when I saw authoritarian, my first, you know, gut instinct was like, oh, that's wrong.
I'm totally with you there because you and I are, I think, a little bit alike like that in the sense that we like to work by ourselves. Right. You know, tell me what you need to done. I'll get it done.
Right.
Or I'm going to execute to the best of my ability to try to get it done. People like that react very negatively to authoritarian type of management where what is this dictator over my shoulder doing? I don't need you. I'm just, but I can, I guess, see environments because I've worked with people that need to be managed. Like I have worked with people that unless somebody is behind them over their shoulder saying, hey, you know, what are you doing? What's going on here? They're not doing.
Right.
They're over at the water cooler. They're hanging out in the back when I was at a restaurant. You know, they're the ones out back smoking and like, you know, other people are getting the work done, you know?
That was kind of what stuck out to me too, is when I look at this, is go, you know, there are parts of all of these that have either at some point or another been part of my management style or that I kind of agree with, you know, and every one of them does give you like the pros and cons of them. And I think that's exactly the point, that if you have a team of people and unless your work and your environment and your job is extremely regimented and has a very specific set of outcomes or goals, most likely you're going to have to adopt a little bit of each of these because it's going to work differently for different people.
Some people
you might work with might need a lot more hands-on. They might need to be watched a little more closely, or, you know, like you might have to spend a little more time with them than you are typically used to or prefer to. Some people might be that person where you can stay relatively hands off. You know that they're going to do their job, they're going to get things done, and they'll come to you if they need something. But otherwise, you don't have to intervene.
Yeah.
And you're probably going to have a lot of people that are going to be somewhere in the middle of that too.
Yep. Yep.
So you know, that was the other thing I kind of want to talk about then, is like shifting away from like these, you know, kind of ambiguous styles.
Before you shift gears on us, because one thought I did have there is that not only can I see different, you know, industries that might require different types of management, I was also thinking about the fact that depending on the size of the company, and this isn't going to be relative to maybe a small size company that has a very thin management level, but if you get into a bigger company where you have levels of management, you might deploy some of these different styles that were in this article. radical relative to your position. That's true. What I mean there is, like, one of the styles that they had is visionary management. I see that completely as an executive level type of management.
Good point.
It would be a really excellent tool. You know, you want the executive to be the visionary. This is the overall goal. This is what we're going for. The visionary, not the minutia person, right?
You
give the vision, right? And then manage that,
right?
Manage the vision. Don't manage the tactical day-to-day in the trenches. That's a different style that somebody, other manager below that executive should be executing.
Right.
So there's some tiering, I think, that would happen even within the company itself, right?
Yeah.
Anyway, now you can shift gears.
No, I'm on board with you there, because you're right. Depending on your level, manager could have a huge impact on what your style should or could be.
Yeah.
So let's talk about some very specific, like, management techniques and strategies, or really maybe not too. You've got one in particular I know you want to talk about. Like, there are so many things out there, good to great, who moved my cheese, the 1 minute manager, like there's any amount of books, any amount of seminars, whole podcasts, you know, blogs, theories. You can go down rabbit holes for days on end of different types of management recommendations. And I don't know that it's hard for me to say what is or isn't better than any of them. I've read some of them and be like, okay, I like some stuff out of that. I like some stuff out of that one. To me, it's hard to find one and say, like, yeah, this is it. But I know you have one in particular that's resonated with you somewhat recently and that you've taken some good nuggets out of.
Yep.
Tell us a little bit more about that.
Yeah. So it's, first off, it's by an individual named Jocko Willink, who is Captain America. I guess that's the only way that I can describe this guy. He's a Navy SEAL, and he's a jiu-jitsu black belt. He is about as Captain America as you can get. I mean, the dude's just built, and he's just the quintessential alpha male if you see him on video or if you listen to him. So for some people, I know that's really hard to get over because they see this and it's just that.
And I'll be honest, it was for me. We watched a video of him a few months back.
Yeah, and I remember
kind of being like, eh.
Yeah, that's not the guy.
This guy is as alpha as I'm not. So, you know.
Absolutely. And I'm not like an overly alpha male like that either. But so if you can get over that and it's just, you know, that's just his disposition. We all have a disposition.
Right.
That's his disposition. But what he preaches in the book that he has written, and it's not... It's a leadership style, and that's where I was earlier in the podcast, kind of the gray line between management and leadership. I mean, when you're a manager, in essence, you are a leader, right? Whether you like it or not, you are leading people. So his philosophy is around what he calls extreme ownership. And so that's the philosophy that you as a manager or a leader own everything that's happening in your world. So I'll just read it real quick. One of his quotes: implementing extreme ownership requires checking your ego. I like that. I'm going to come back to that. And operating with a high degree of humility, admitting mistakes, taking ownership, developing a plan to overcome the challenges are integral to any successful team. So that's basically what he preaches, right? And what he means by extreme ownership is that some people are like, yeah, you know, this issue happened and I owned a little bit of that. You know, I had some role in this that got messy over here. No, he's like, no, if you're on the team, extreme ownership is that you own the issue. You know, it is part of that whole thing. And to do that, you have to do that. You have to do the two things that I highlighted. You have to be able to check your ego, which a lot of people are really find that very difficult to do. And they have to have a high degree of humility, right? You have to understand that I'm not the best one in the room, or maybe my actions here were complicit in what happened. So I think from a management style, I had been thinking about it for quite some time. And for whatever reason, when I saw Jocko and there was this little video, the one that I showed you, and yeah, I got over the fact that, okay, he's this alpha man. It's like, just nobody that I would be a friend with, you know, typically.
Right.
That's not somebody I would have. But his message totally resonated with me. I'm like, dang, that is it. You know, just ownership, the ability to own and understand that. And understand, because it gets you in the mindset of being able to understand so much of a fluid situation. You know, if you feel like you are complicit in it and that you're owning up to what's going on, you're going to work to be a part of the team that's at the end of the road overcoming the challenges that are in front of you. Whatever, and every team has challenges, right? You might have new direction that the company is going in, or it might be maybe some old direction that you are in, but you're trying to execute and you weren't executing it correctly. When you look at bad leaders are the ones that will come into a situation and go, oh, well, I see what happened here. Charlie failed. Betsy didn't do this correctly, and therefore it all broke down. That's the exact wrong thing to do. That will do nothing but deteriorate the team, make the situation even worse off, as opposed to stepping back, having a little bit of humility and saying, you know what? Part of this is my fault in the sense that I didn't either communicate exactly what we were trying to do, or I didn't train the person that I did give the authority to execute properly. So we're going to reanalyze this, and we're going to overcome the challenges as a means of that. So that's a part of what extreme ownership is all about.
Yeah. You know, it's funny, as we talked about, when we first saw this video, this guy, and I do remember thinking like, wow, this dude is intense more intense maybe than I care for him to be.
Right.
And I, when you sent me the links, when we were talking about putting this podcast together, and you sent me the links to the book and to an article about it. And I remember first thing that popped in my head was like, oh, this guy, I'm like, all right, Dean.
Dean's going this route again.
Let's talk about this dude who will, beat your head in and then tell you how to manage something. But then I started reading this stuff and I'm like,
he's the exact opposite.
I was like, there was a lot of stuff about it that I'm like, all right, I do agree and get a lot of the ownership aspect is definitely one that I've always felt was important. It is an extremely hard thing. It goes against human nature to some extent.
It does.
There are very few selfless people, truly selfless people. Yep. And I think
Mother Teresa, and that's about it, right?
Exactly. And if you're an effective manager, I think you have to have a little bit of selflessness involved in you. And when I was reading about I think he mentioned his video talking about, having squadrons of men out there that you may be in charge of, a whole platoon or something that is 50 men, 50 plus men and women, and deciding like, hey, I can't control all of them at once. Mm-hmm. It's not a video game. I'm not in charge of all of them at once.
Right. No way.
I can only take control of what I'm doing. Mm-hmm. I can message out what needs to be accomplished and hopefully I've got the right people to get it done. And if they don't, maybe there's something I did wrong. It probably is something that I did wrong. Mm-hmm. I picked the wrong person to lead that particular part of the platoon. Mm-hmm. I picked the wrong person for that certain job. I didn't think about the strategy well. And I think that stuff applies to management of any kind. Mm-hmm. And to me, the big thing that kind of stood out, and he didn't really talk of it this way, but it's the idea of delegation, which is one of those things, and I will admit, was hard for me as a manager. Mm-hmm. And it's probably still would be. It's probably part of the reason I'm not that keen on management anymore because I'm a do-it-yourselfer kind of guy.
Absolutely.
I've always been someone who, you give me a task, I want to figure out how can I accomplish this myself with as little, input from others or as little need to reach out to others as possible.
Yep.
And
yep.
that's never a great thing. It can be handy, it can be useful, and it's one of those things where hopefully my managers look at me and say, hey, I don't need to worry too much about John because he's going to take care of stuff. Mm-hmm. But at the same time, there are times when I know that I've been like, you know what? I probably could have simplified this if I just reached out or asked for some help or had somebody do some of this for me. Mm-hmm. And that was a very hard lesson for me when I got into management. And I remember my manager, my regional manager when I was a district manager, telling me at times, hey, you got to delegate a little bit more.
Delegation.
Yeah,
difficult.
You've got two or three people on your team that are on a management track themselves. Mm-hmm. Give them some work. Let them be the one to guide some people. Let them intervene and give a little bit of training and a little bit of direction to some of the others on the team. Delegate out a little bit. And it's so hard to do.
It is hard to
do. But I think that's exactly what he's talking about.
Well, he does talk about it. Well, that's one of the things. So not only is it extreme ownership, but in his military terms, he calls it decentralized command.
Right.
And decentralized command is proven time and time and time again to be the most effective way to run a military. Now, in you and I was never in the military.
No.
Yeah, right. So we're coming out of this at an angle that's part of the whole reason why initially when I saw Jocko, I'm like, well, I don't connect to that.
Right.
I'm not a military guy. I wasn't in the military. I mean, as a little kid, I went around and shot a gun, a little whatever. But I wasn't him. I wasn't, Captain America. That wasn't who I am. But anyway, he calls it decentralized command, and I totally agree. I think that is one of the most difficult things for managers to do because typically managers have been put in the position, these are the people that get stuff done, right? You rarely do you see people getting promoted who don't execute. period.
Yep.
So you know, you're usually promoting people who can execute, but those people oftentimes have a hard time letting go of the reins, myself included. You know, I put myself, and that's why this has kind of rung with me over the last couple of years that, you know, I'm not an authoritarian type, but I'm a doer. I know I am.
Right.
And if I'm in a job with a team, I'm going to do everything I can to make sure that whatever we're getting tasked with gets done. And if that means I got to do his job and his job or portions of her job to get it done, I'm going to get it done. So,
yep.
But that's, there's a dichotomy there, right? You got to get, once you get into management, you have to be able to delegate. I love the word decentralize what you're doing, you know, train people, make sure they understand exactly what we're all trying to execute here and let them do what they want, what they're going to do.
Completely concur.
Yeah.
So let's kind of talk, we'll wrap up our main conversation here by talking a little bit about management right now, because again, as we've mentioned every episode and who knows, maybe mentioning for quite some time to come, because this is just the topic that just won't go away, and it informs everything that's going on in the business world and the world in general, and that's the COVID-19 crisis.
Yeah.
So and obviously I'm going to lean on you here a little bit because you are currently a manager.
Yeah.
But let's talk a little bit about management in the time of COVID, where, you know, you may have employees that are potentially working remotely that you don't get to see or supervise every day. You may have employees that you've had, you know, and obviously this hasn't been the case for us, thankfully, but like, you know, maybe you're a manager where you've had to, you know, to downsize, or, you know, maybe your entire workforce has been laid off for a time and mm-hmm. you're struggling to bring it back together again, or maybe you're dealing with complete different changes to how you operate because mm-hmm. you can't get in front of people as easily or as often as you might have before. So, mm-hmm. you know, I want to let you start off and talk a little bit about, you know, what's different about managing in COVID for you, and maybe what do you see overall as, you know, some things that people could be doing during this time?
Well, and I can definitely appreciate that. I'm going to hearken to some materials that I've read that kind of helped me shore up in my mind things that I've been experiencing as well, mm-hmm. you know, trying to manage people in this new work from home type of environment where clearly our office was, you know, prior to March 17th or 16th or whatever, you know, everybody came into the office, big bullpen, lots of cubicles, lots of interaction, lots of body language, all that good stuff. And that, you know, that led to the management. But I guess three things that I read completely agree with this, that make managing in this pandemic very difficult. Number one, training. Mm-hmm. If you're bringing in new people or if you're replacing somebody, training people a lot more difficult in this environment mm-hmm. if you were not set up to do remote training, which most companies are not set up to do remote training. What's the normal? Oh, you know, Susie's coming in today. She's going to sit next to Bobby. And through osmosis, you know, they're going to learn. This is what we do here. You can't do that when you're, you know, remote. So training, very, very difficult. Collaboration really slows down. It's harder to collaborate with people. It just is.
Right.
Maybe we're getting used to it now that everybody's a little bit more used to video on my computer and interacting with people via this screen as opposed to interpersonally. But collaboration's much more difficult mm-hmm. in today's world. And then finally, project speed. You know, the speed in which a project will be accomplished really slows down, is really slowing down here. So some of the articles that I read, you know, kind of to combat that, and when you think about that, I love this nugget: define shorter term metrics for success. So I think that's a really good takeaway in this world, meaning, you know, it used to be maybe we could manage by setting these lofty goals and then, you know, kind of managing them as you're seeing people and stuff like that. And you've got an eye on the direction of the team and are we doing what we're trying to do. But in a work from home environment, that just kind of goes away because you don't know. You're not interfacing with people on a daily basis. So how do you combat that? Well, set smaller targets, you know, smaller goals, shorten up the, you know, so if it's going to take you whatever, previously it took you 3 steps to get to the goal that you were trying to, now you got to break that down into 10 steps and then, you know, put some metrics behind that. Are we doing this? Did we do this? So your management style is a little bit different, you know, in that regard. Those are just some of the things that I'm, you know, that I had noticed, if you were, that I'm experiencing in this new world.
Yeah, I have to think that like the micromanagement types are really struggling.
Oh my gosh, right they now. Have to be. Like, they have I mean, to be. Or they're driving their employees even more
yeah,
crazy.
Exactly. They're constantly calling them. They're constantly reaching out to them. They're sending them a ton of emails or maybe they're screen watching whatever it is they can do from home, you know, from afar.
Yeah.
Yeah, I agree. Like this has to be a challenging time. I know I would struggle to be a manager, right? Actually, you know, I tried to always have a team that I felt like I could, you know, could take care of themselves on their own if they needed to. Mm-hmm. But I also know almost invariably all managers have that one or two people on your team that you know are not necessarily going to be getting the job done and that you did have to pay attention to a little bit more. Mm-hmm. And you're probably sitting there going, I know right now, I know they're not doing it. Like they've been idle on our chat for 6 hours.
Yeah. And what are they doing?
It's 5 o'clock already, right. Like something like that. But you know, a couple of things that popped up to me is like setting expectations. You know, you kind of mentioned the little check steps, you know, and that means like, hey, maybe your expectations have to change but you do need to set some, you know, make sure people do understand like, hey, this is what I'm still expecting out of you.
Yep.
I get that things are going to be different. I get that, you know, that it's a whole different world than what we're used to. There's going to be some things that are going to be easier to do or just as easy to do and some things that are going to be a lot harder to do. Mm-hmm. But here's what I still expect out of you. Mm-hmm. Communication. There's got to be communication.
Yeah.
You know, and it's funny because when we first started work from home, there was a lot of like, let's get together on calls and a lot of let's have meetings and let's have talks. Mm-hmm. And I remember initially thinking like, look, the problem, the answer right now is not more communication. Not that it was less either, but like, overdoing it and having like a phone call or a conversation or a meeting every single day wasn't going to help either, especially early on. And this is still, you know, a situation for a lot of people where a lot of us were working from home, potentially with spouses and children, where being able to put together a solid couple hours of straight work was difficult enough as it is, let alone being able to also then make time for more meetings and calls and emails and, you know, and discussions than you were having.
No doubt.
If you were even in the office.
No doubt.
So I think you got to find a nice balance there.
Mm-hmm.
Information, transparency.
Mm-hmm.
You know, this is one of those things where like, hey, this situation right now is crazier than anything any of us have ever dealt with in our lifetimes. Mm-hmm. And there's so much information out there, good information, bad information, misinformation.
Mm-hmm.
And I think, you know, as a manager, your job in general is usually to disseminate information, you know, whether it's, you know, something that's coming down from the top or something that's, you know, changing and altering in your business or your, you know, your operations.
Mm-hmm.
You know, a good manager is someone who is communicating and getting that information out and being very as transparent as possible, in my mind at least.
Yep.
Right now, that's even more important than ever. If you aren't telling people and helping them understand, like, hey, here's what's happening, here's where we are right now as a business, this is what we need to be doing and what we can't be doing, and here's, you know, here's what's going to happen over the next couple of weeks. Like, if you're not having those conversations on a regular basis, then you've got a bunch of people that have no idea what's going on.
And I'll tell you, that kind of goes back to that whole humility thing. You got to have a certain degree of humility to understand that, you know, you don't have all the answers, especially this what we've been going through over the last 5-4 months, whatever. Nobody's been through this. I mean, the type of thing. So you have to have a certain level of humility during these times in order to be cognizant of that, cognizant of the fact that everybody's a little anxious. Everybody needs information. You got to be transparent about that. Even if it's transparent that you may not be making a decision that everybody's going to agree with.
Right.
Okay. But at least everybody's on board on the board as far as knowing what is being talked about, what decisions are being made, and those types of things.
Yeah. And, you know, and I think, too, this has definitely been a situation which has helped a lot of people identify where the good and bad managers are. Because I think the response to this has meant a lot to people figuring out, hey, you know, is my manager good at this or are they not so great at this?
Yeah.
You know, and to me, like, and this would be, again, my personal management style would be, like, the focus on the well-being of my employees and realize, like, hey, we're all going through something here that is not only, you know, potentially a health crisis where, you know, everyone's got to worry about keeping themselves safe and healthy. And,
absolutely.
And, and you're worried about your families, you're worried about your friends, you're potentially worried about your jobs as well and your own, you know, financial well-being. But you got to think of like the stress that comes with it, you know, the environment that people might be in. Some people might have it easier than others to be able to go home and start working. Mm-hmm. You know, we've talked about this plenty of times. Like, we're very fortunate we're in a situation where we get to go work from home, you know, and we have employees at our very company that are still out in our distribution center every day that have to show up there and work, or, you know, our jobs don't matter anymore either.
Nothing's picking and packing and shipping. So.
Exactly. So, you know, it's being cognizant of that well-being of your entire staff and ideally putting that above everything else, like recognizing like, look, we do have jobs to do, But, you know, if you're not mentally and, you know, physically safe and healthy right now, that doesn't accomplish anything either. You know, losing your workforce doesn't help you get anywhere
at all. And so one tip, I guess, and one thing that I read and that really resonated with me too, and maybe this kind of speaks to it, is empowering staff at every level. So that's a really powerful phrase, right? Empowering people. And when you think about that for a second, you know, in the world that we're in now, that manifests itself in a lot of different ways. Empowering somebody is enabling them to make the decisions that are relative to their child care. You know, I've been on quite a few meetings where people will tell me, hey, the best time to talk to me is between 1:30 and 2:30 because that's when my child is taking a nap.
All right.
Awesome.
Right.
You know, that is empowering that individual to live this dual life right now. But at the end of the road and where you were going, and you're absolutely right, a company doesn't, the single biggest asset to any company is their employees, period.
Right.
End of story. So whatever you can do to nurture that, at least the people that are good, trying to do the right thing and execute, you should do that. So empowering staff. And again, that's going to manifest itself in different ways, especially in this work from home, kids are with me type of environment. Mm-hmm. What do you need to do as a manager to empower those individuals? Do you need to allow them to work later? Do you need to be cognizant of the fact that, hey, their work schedule is going to be skewed a little bit because of the new world that they're living in?
Yep.
Do you need to give them different tools? Do they need to be trained on something a little bit differently? Do you need to be a little bit more lenient, you know, in some areas? Do you need to support that person and back them with something else? Maybe they can't get their reports done on Monday morning because they've got the child that they have to do. Okay, is there another team member that can just, you know, help them out in this small period of time? So empowering them, right? And understanding what they're going through, I think are critical at this time.
And hey, for our listeners, if you kind of like where we're going here without getting too far into the remote work thing, we actually are going to do another podcast that'll be in the feed in the future about remote work.
Yep.
So tune in for that one because we're going to dive a little bit more into what it means to be working from home right now, working remotely, not just for managers, but for employees themselves. Mm-hmm. Maybe some tips and tricks, some things that can go well, not go well. So stay tuned for that podcast in the future as well.
I got another one for you that I came across too. Seed the development of passionate champions of change. You know, and what that is, you know, I like the beginning of that, seed the development of passionate champions. And, you know, when you're a manager and you know the people that are, you know, executing, trying to get stuff done, part of the challenge of management is not just managing the people that aren't executing. Mm-hmm. You know, I think a lot of times managers get caught in that. Oh, I've got these 2-3 people on my team that they suck. Yeah. You know, and so I got to spend all my effort on correcting that. A lot of people will argue, okay, maybe, but what you need to be cognizant of the fact of the people that are doing it and enabling those seeding developments of passion. I love that because I love people on the team that are passionate about what they're trying to do. And how do I enable those? You know, you can argue it's worth just as much effort putting behind those that are getting stuff done, those that are great team members and trying to get the stuff done, as it is to those that are failing. You see where I'm going with that?
Yep. Well, I mean, and let's be honest, I can speak to that myself to some extent because when we started this podcast under the pandemic.
Yep.
Yeah, I mean, you know, when we were talking about it just before we kind of went into our shutdown and stopped going into the office regularly.
Yep.
And during that time, like, you know, this has become my thing. It's, you know, I mean, I've got other jobs, you know, Blue Star, obviously, but like this has become a regular passion for me and a project for me is to every week put this out. And it's been something that I've felt like I could connect to every single week. It was something is like, man, you know, regardless of everything else that's going on and how crazy and weird it is, I get to start a podcast, you know, like, you know, I get to plan things out.
I love it when the world comes together like
that. It does. Like, and even though it's a weird time to do it because our plan was we've got 2 other chairs here in the studio and our plan was that we would have people in here with us on a regular basis.
In fact, we said, we're never going to dial in people remotely.
Exactly.
That's never going to happen.
We were going to avoid that at all costs. And every single episode, if we've had a guest, it's pretty much been them dialing in unless it's been someone local. Yeah. So, you know, it's just, you know, we had to adapt, we had to change. And yet I think at the same time, we've produced a pretty damn good podcast along the way.
Yeah. So, yeah, I mean, there are some good nuggets, and I appreciate this conversation, because I think that, you know, there is something to be said for I hate to keep using the phrase, the new normal that we're in. I mean, it's just, you know, people need to be cognizant that maybe the way that they were doing things in January, February need to be modified a little bit. So,
that is a very good point to me, because, you know, and I think we've kind of brought that up a couple of times in other pods about very specific situations where you can't have this attitude that when this is done, quote, mm-hmm. you know, I'm making the quote fingers right now, and we have no idea when this is done or mm-hmm. if it's ever really done in the sense that we think it's going to be, mm-hmm. things aren't going to go back to exactly the way they were. Mm-hmm. And I think a good manager is someone that recognizes that and thinks about, like, hey, what is working right now? What has changed? What is different? And what's potentially start thinking about what's going to be different in the future? Mm-hmm. Like, maybe it means that you do allow your workforce still to continue working from mm-hmm. home, or, mm-hmm. you know, you allow them to split that time, or you have that flexibility again. Like, what worked during this time that I can take with us into the future? Well, because the future is now. Like, yeah, it's happening right now. Oh, things are changing.
Yeah.
And this is right to me, what's happening right now, this kind of change that's happening on a worldwide scale, is not something that just one day you just go back to where you were in, as you mentioned, you know, in 2019, you know, like there's no 2019 is going to happen again. This is the new world going forward. And a lot of things are going to change. And I think good managers are the ones that are going to be thinking about, like, what's going to change in the future? What are we doing now that's going to mm-hmm. make an impact on the future?
I mean, I think that you're a fool to think that we're not going to have some hybrid of where we're at today, right? Of work from home, work in the office, how teams interact with one another, the whole electronic spectrum of our work life now, it's gonna live on. It doesn't go away. The switch doesn't flip you know, like that. So here's the good news in my mind, and I'm always the optimist, I guess, is that some of the things that the managers have learned along the way here, empower your staff, you know, communicate, seed passion, you know, decentralize command or delegate, you know, these things that, that managers have been confronted with now in our normal now, are doing nothing but really kind of benefiting the workforce to a certain degree. Whether or not they were going to be, you know, even if people do go back to a majority in office type of experience, there's no discounting the fact that these things that we as a society have learned, at least in our society, are going to transition over.
Yeah. I agree. Yeah. Well, listen, for our listeners, if you have any additional thoughts, if you are managers yourselves and you want to tell us a little bit about your style, what does and doesn't work for you, anything we might have missed out on, please feel free to reach out to us. You can find us on Twitter at TechConnectPod. You can email us techconnect@bluestarinc.com. All right, now we're going to shift over to our recurring segments, the value to the VAR and what's tech connecting with us. You know, I don't want to go too far into this. We've had a long discussion. I think we've touched on a lot of it already. But, you know, the value of the VAR, I kind of wanted to just share. Are there any additional personal tips, tricks, recommendations for management that we haven't talked about that you want to throw out there?
Well, it's not necessarily that, but I do think that it is important to remind people to be cognizant of the fact that we're managing people now, you know, today, and that, you know, when stuff hits the fan, like it has over the last 4 months, when it's easy to get distracted by everything that's happening in the world, not just the pandemic, but here in the United States, all the other things that we're dealing with, that are equally as important, and totally understand why it takes up, you know, part of your mental capacity to even think about all the things that are going on. When you're a manager, you have to understand that you're still managing people. So I think that it's relevant, and the value here is to be cognizant. And sometimes you got to hit the reset button. Am I doing this correctly? Are we executing in the way? Be cognizant of what we talked about here. I mean, ownership, decentralized command, respect at the end of the road, right? Maybe that's another word we can put on the table, that I think good managers are respectful of the people that they're managing, and just understand that and be cognizant.
I like that you put it that way, because when you say initially respect, I think a lot of people's first point thing to pop in their mind about have been, I want my people to respect me. That's not what we're talking about.
No.
Be respectful of your people. Respect the people that work for you.
Yes.
Maybe
yes.
Yes. Hopefully that means that they end up respecting you as well. But it's not, again, it's not about you as the manager. It's about your people.
There's that humility and that ego. You got to keep your ego in check at the door. You know, that I see where you, I wasn't even thinking the respect.
It's just, it did. It popped into my head for a second.
Different disposition.
And I know that's not what you really meant, but that's, I think that's when people think of management and respect, they think like, oh, they're going to respect
me. They're going to respect me. Yeah.
Like, it's not about you.
Bad manager. Yep. Bad manager, dude.
I mean, you want them to respect you, sure.
Oh, yeah.
But I think if you're being respectful of them, that it's a mutual respect.
If that's your goal, I think your goal needs to shift. If your goal is, I want everybody to respect me, and you're just going to talk yourself into thinking, oh, they all respect me, or the ones that don't, they were losers anyway, and they shouldn't have been on my team. Mm.
Exactly.
Wrong disposition. What's the value to the VAR for you?
The couple extra things that I had written down that we hadn't gotten to, one of them was being part of the hiring process and the coaching process as well. I think when I was in management, coaching was a big aspect of what all of us, the managers in my particular, job were taught.
Gotcha.
And it's something that resonated with me too, because it was something I appreciated, where someone who's willing to come talk to you about what was and wasn't working, whether you again are that employee who works just fine on your own, which maybe is that person is not someone you have to spend as much time coaching.
Mm-hmm.
But there's some people that you do. And I think a phrase that came up sometimes in our management meetings back then was, coach them up or coach them out, which is this idea that like, hey, you've got people on your team that are willing and ready to do better and be better, and you can work with them and coach them to get them there. But then you're going to have some people that simply aren't a fit, and you're going to know who those people probably are.
Mm-hmm.
But you still take that coaching step anyway, because sometimes they can surprise you. The person you may look at and think, man, this isn't somebody, it's not going to cut it. Maybe with a little coaching and a little bit of effort, they turn into that person. And if they don't, then you can at least have laid the path and said, I have done everything I could to make this person a better employee. They still aren't where they need to be. Mm-hmm. Now it's time for us to cut them and move on and find someone else.
Mm.
But I think also being part of the hiring process, I have worked in management where I had nothing to do with the hiring process necessarily, or at least a very limited amount where someone got just kind of dumped into my lap and like, this is someone that we've now hired and they're on your team.
Mm-hmm.
And I think that's such a difficult thing for a manager. And granted, sometimes you just don't have a choice.
Right.
But if you have the choice and you have the ability to be part of the process,
be in the process,
be in the room, at least be involved in some way, have a conversation with that person, because if someone just gets dropped onto your team that someone else thought was a great hire, to give you an example, I was in a manager position once where the VP of the company, the VP of sales, met a guy at a gym who like just sold them hardcore on a gym membership, and they thought, this is a great salesperson.
Oh, no.
So they got hired, and I think at the time it wasn't my team, but they got dropped in, and eventually this person ended up on my team. And it was someone that that never gelled with me.
Right.
Struggled with a lot, eventually ended up leaving the company under some very unfortunate circumstances that probably shouldn't and couldn't have happened. And it was one of those things where I think we all kind of thought like, well, this person liked them, we have to hire them, right?
Right.
And it did not work out.
Mm-hmm.
And it was a clear example of me like, man, if I had been involved, there was enough red flags I feel like I would have spotted during the interview process to never bring this person in.
And we wouldn't have been in this situation that we were in.
But it didn't happen. Yeah.
Yeah.
So be part of that process when you can.
That's a good one.
Micromanaging, I'm not a fan of micromanagement. Mm-hmm. And I know there are some situations where you kind of have to do a little bit more than others.
Mm-hmm.
But if you can avoid it until you have to.
Well, okay.
Because there are times when you do, it's important and you do need to do it. But I think in general, try to stay back and not micromanage, because no one likes that.
All right, so let's riff on this. How do you become aware of the fact that you're a micromanager? So
well, that's
what I'm
a
saying
good question.
Here is that, maybe micromanagers, because I've witnessed micromanagers from afar. Of course, we all are cognizant when we're under a micromanager, but I've seen people from afar, and I don't think that they think that they're micromanagers.
Yeah, that's a very
good
point.
Think that they're just trying to, I don't know what. So how do you become cognizant? Because I can tell you this, just about everybody that I've ever interviewed or that I've ever talked to a person, they're always like, yeah, micromanagers are terrible. Anybody who's going to be over my shoulder, I don't want that. If you're that kind of a manager, I don't want to work for you. And I'm in agreement with that. But how do people understand if they are a micromanager?
I don't know if there's a golden nugget there, but I guess more than anything might be like, if you look at your team, let's say you have a team of 10 people, I don't know, 5 people even.
Mm-hmm.
If you know everything that's going on with everybody on your team at all times and are always reviewing their work and are always concerned about their work, if you feel like you have to check – everyone's work, you might be a micromanager.
I feel
like we're doing like our
Jeff Foxworthy.
You might be a redneck. You might be a micromanager.
You might be a micromanager.
Yeah. So if it's a situation where you're like, hey, you've got one or two people that you're constantly keeping tabs on, but everyone else, you feel pretty comfortable letting them do what they do without having to keep checks and balances on them every day, then you're probably not. Maybe you are for a couple people, but maybe there's a reason you are. But if you feel like, if you look at your team and you know everything about all the work they're doing, and you maybe also that you demand to know, like you expect them to copy you on all the emails,
right?
Or you expect them to send you some kind of daily report or checklist all the time,
right?
If that expectation's there,
then
you don't need it, right?
Yeah.
And especially if you have like two or three top performers that you know, like, man, they're knocking it out of the park every day, and if you're still thinking to yourself, why am I asking for that stuff from them all the time?
Yeah.
Like, would they do this even if I didn't ask for it? Then you might be micromanaging.
See, I think when you're a junior manager, I think they're more prone to being micromanagers because I'll just bring this back to where we were earlier. Delegate. You know, as I was listening to you talk, you know, a micromanager is not comfortable with delegating tasks and enabling the team to execute on that. So, you know, whereas a non-micromanager will say, okay, Sue, I need you to do, you know, here's the goal. We need to do this, whatever this is. We need to create a campaign, or we need to run this report, or we need to be able to report up the chain, you know, of these types of things. So, you know, good luck and come back to me when you think that you're done. That's delegating,
yeah,
right?
Exactly.
As opposed to, you know, I want to see the next iteration of your report and, you know, give me these incremental steps. If you're doing that, you're probably micromanaging the people and you're not comfortable with delegating.
Exactly.
Just understand that you're just not. And you need to become more comfortable with that, because at the end of the road, decentralized, delegated world is a much better world for the manager to live in, believe it or not, because now you've enabled your people. The team is operating in a much more of a healthy environment. Yeah, you can find the people that aren't. You're probably going to have to micromanage them to a certain degree. Or I like coach up or coach out.
Yeah, you
got to coach them out. But for those other people that are getting stuff done and the team is healthy, let them go.
Yep.
Let them do what they want to do.
Or exactly.
Not what they want to do, but let them do how they're going to do it, as long as they're getting to the goal, right?
Exactly.
There,
and I think my last little pro tip is, do not hire a team of clones. I mean, seriously, like if you're trying to hire people that
mini-me's,
are just like you,
mini-me's,
that like, right, you know, are same personality type, same managerial style, believe in all the same things, trust me, that team will never work, because you're going to be missing something. Because I hate to say it, no matter how awesome you think you are, there is some flaw in your game somewhere.
Oh, 100%.
And if as a manager, if you don't have a team of people who can help fill in those gaps and address those flaws that you have,
that's an excellent gold nugget here at
diversity.
The end. Yeah, diversity.
Find, you know, whether it's, you know, someone with a different cultural attitude, whether it's someone with a different style of work, whether it's someone older, younger, whatever it is, you know, it's a great thing to have a team of people that are not exactly like you. In fact, ideally, there's no one on your team that's exactly like you. Because again, like, you need to fill in those
absolutely
gaps.
Absolutely. Yeah. And I would hate for somebody to just lean back and say, well, John told me that, you know, I need to hire people that aren't like me. And now look at the mess that it's gotten in me into. You have to embrace that.
Right.
Leverage the fact that you have these diverse people and understand what their skill sets are and how you can leverage that to the betterment of the team. Everybody has different skills, right?
Yep.
I mean, it's just period. Everybody has. So you just need to learn that as the manager. That's a good one here. Look at you. Late in the innings here, you pull out the diversification on the team.
There you go.
Nice.
All right. So let's wrap things up with our favorite segment. That's What's Tech Connecting with Us.
Yep.
This is where we answer a question about, you know, what's something cool or neat that we are watching, reading, playing with, some piece of technology that's caught our interest. Dean, what is Tech Connecting with you this week?
So, AI is one of these acronyms that keeps getting talked about. Artificial intelligence. It's one of those things that I keep grappling with in my mind about, you know, I'm trying to get this clear vision of what artificial intelligence is, and it's still a bit of a cloud, right?
Yep.
I mean, AI, that's a little bit of AI there. Siri's a little bit of AI, you know, whatever. We're using artificial intelligence and making decisions that we're doing. Here's one, and as it relates to deep learning. So and some of this that I was reading an article on ThomasNet and considering AI for visual inspection. So you're in a manufacturing world, you know, put yourself in a manufacturing world and using AI to do the visual inspection of quality control. here's the thing that's coming down the line. You know, is everything right? Does it look right? Visually inspected, something that a human would do, right?
Right.
Generally. But AI is now being used for that. But what's fascinating to me is the deep learning that a computer has to go through mm-hmm. in order to be human-esque, if you will, or to be able to do that visual inspection. And so this article talks about, really, there's three ways that you can train a computer on learning and how to learn. And what's so you can either use pre-existing video, you can use open source video, or you can gather new data. So let me first stop on the fact that it's all video based. You know, that was kind of like an enlightening moment for me. I'm like, AI, deep learning, we are teaching computers what we do. We just look right. at things over and over and over again. Yeah. So how do you teach AI? How do you teach a computer? You give them the visual information and you try to do a data dump, right? So, and you're either doing that by pre-existing video that was out there. Maybe there was some video of this manufacturing line for the last, I don't know, 500 hours
right,
and you're going
right.
to put all that information in the computer and the computer is going to watch every single one of those boxes go by
in seconds, probably
in seconds. And now that's in its in artificial intelligence, or you don't have that information. So you got to create that information. Okay. So now you got to build into your project plan that this device needs some deep learning. So now
right.
I have a better understanding of what people mean by deep learning. What deep learning means is giving the computer a little bit of time to consume and analyze the
right.
information, in this case, visual information that's the using it in AI. That was pretty cool.
I know,
that was one of those articles. I'm like, okay, now I'm starting to connect some of these dots about, you know, how a practical application of artificial intelligence doing visual quality inspection in a manufacturing environment.
Yeah.
Geez, if our resellers aren't getting into that, they should.
Because no doubt.
I can see that. I can see that as being one of the areas where, yeah, AI. Oh, that's just AI checking that box.
Yep.
You know, yeah.
That's awesome.
Yeah.
Okay.
What about you? What's tech connecting
well,
with you?
It's funny. When you first started talking about that, I was worried you'd actually stolen mine because
uh-oh.
Mine has to do with AI machine learning as well.
Okay.
And I guess the first thing I want to point out is the things that we – the way we see, taste, smell, identify like things, especially like in food production, but it could
okay.
be in anywhere that that our senses are being applied to
all
a
right.
product in some way. Those products probably don't come out that way.
Mm-hmm.
How many times have you seen something that's got artificial flavoring? You know, like something doesn't taste like strawberry because it automatically tasted like strawberry.
Right.
Something
gotcha.
Doesn't smell like roses because it automatically smelled like roses.
Mm-hmm.
There's usually something that has to be applied in order to make that happen. Some kind of chemical or some kind of, you know, flavoring or
yep.
whatever.
Got it.
Well, UC Riverside has been exploring this and they got into the smell side of things. So they're working with AI and machine learning to basically create artificial intelligence that can identify how smells are going to smell to a person.
Okay.
I didn't dive super far into this, so I'm not going to get too far into the weeds here. But basically, like they're teaching machines and teaching
mm-hmm.
AI to understand mm-hmm. how certain types of chemicals when mixed together, certain products when put together,
yep.
what kind of smell is that going to create, and what are we as people going to identify?
How are
those
we going to react
as?
To that?
Right.
I see.
So
when
rather
chemical
than,
A and chemical B come together, most humans
exactly.
don't like that. Or, yeah, okay, got it.
Yeah. So I that's pretty much the gist of what they're trying to do is figure out, like, is
yes.
there a quicker and simpler way that rather than maybe having to run through 100 tests where, like, okay, we know these two chemicals when combined can sort of make a, you know, a pleasant,
mm-hmm.
Green tree aroma or something
mm-hmm.
like that, you know, a pine
mm-hmm.
tree aroma or something. We know mm-hmm. this stuff works, but we want it to be very specific. We want to know exactly what we need to put together. So maybe they work with AI instead to identify, like, hey, we've mixed all these together over the years. We know exactly what does or doesn't do this. And maybe it can help us identify some new smells or figure out, like, hey, what do we need to add to our particular product and what already exists in order to give it the fresh pine aroma instead?
I gotcha. See,
again,
that's a practical use of AI.
Head.
No, I like it. I mean, I totally see where that is going. Hopefully used for the best.
Oh, yeah, I would hope so. Yeah, yeah. Let's be honest. Everything can be used for the worst in some way if
right.
someone thinks about
right.
it hard enough.
Yeah.
But
yeah. But I mean, I'm becoming more knowledgeable of aromatherapy and
yep.
you know, walking into environments and yeah, okay.
Well, and there is something to be said for that because right. you know there's been a lot of studies, especially in recent years, about smells and how
mm-hmm.
they make us feel
mm-hmm.
when we're in certain places. You know,
mm-hmm.
like so I've heard of like retail establishments that have figured out how to pipe in certain smells
mm-hmm.
in order to entice people to buy
mm-hmm.
or entice
yep.
people to stick around.
Right.
Or, you know, or maybe maybe like the way you flavor, the way your food is flavored, or not flavored, but the smell of your food, like when you're cooking something, the aroma that's given off. Mm-hmm. So that maybe when you walk into a restaurant or buy a restaurant, you're more inclined to stop and eat there mm-hmm. because the smell has been carefully calculated. It's all about manipulation. It's always all about manipulation. It all goes back to like, how can we get somebody to buy something by manipulating their senses?
Yeah, okay. But isn't it funny that really what we're talking about here is just using technology to do what the baker did 300 years ago. Just open the door after he cooked the bread or she cooked the bread and let the customers come in because it smells so good.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah, oh my. Yeah, it comes full circle.
It does,
John.
So that's what's Tech Connecting with us. Dean, this has been a great conversation, as always, about management. Again, anybody out there, if you have your own thoughts, please feel free to reach out to us. And hey, please leave us a 5-star review on Apple Podcasts.
Yep.
If you do that, we will be happy to maybe read some of those reviews on air, answer questions that you might have. So it's time for us to unplug for now. For Dean Reverman, I'm John Martin. Until next time, stay connected. The Tech Connect podcast is brought to you by Elo. Enhance patient care everywhere it matters. Elo offers touchscreen product solutions for a variety of healthcare applications, ranging from nurse stations and patient education to patient check-in and pharmacy check-out. Streamline healthcare administration and enhance the patient experience with Elo's versatile solutions. To learn more, visit Elo's microsite on bluestarinc.com or contact your Blue Star account manager. Looking to help your customers save a little money and contribute to a good cause during this time of crisis? Now through September 25th, 2020, select Zebra Healthcare scanners are eligible for up to a $50 instant rebate. In addition, Zebra will donate $5 to the Red Cross for every scanner purchased through this promotion. This promo is only available to Zebra Partner Connect members. To learn more, click the link in the show notes or visit the promotions page on bluestarinc.com.